Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Today's You podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester. I'm going to be going over some spring football wrap-ups as well as looking ahead to the NFL draft, try and get some college football perspective on that. We'll also be touching on some college basketball recruiting and some of the biggest impact transfers that are going to get a chance to play after sitting out in 2015. We'll kick things off, though, with Alex. Alex, how's it going?
Hi, Colin. How are you, man?
Doing pretty well, thanks. So we've had most of the spring games completed. The only two left are the Oregon Ducks, which is a pretty big game, and then the Hawaii game, both this weekend. For the most part, though, they're wrapped up. Lots of takeaways. One battle in particular that's getting a lot of attention is the Notre Dame quarterback situation. You have Malik Zaire and Everett Golson. Both performed pretty well throughout the spring and in the spring game, it sounds like. To you, Alex, who is the better fit at Notre Dame for winning this year? Clearly, both have a lot of talent. Golson has more experience. Zaire led them to a really quality win against LSU in the bowl game. Who, if you had to pick right now, is your quarterback in South Bend?
Yeah, Colin, well, first off, I really wouldn't be surprised with whoever Kelly really wanted to start. But I've had a lot of people chip in, you know, over the past week with the FanRag feature that the dual quarterback system would be the best option for, you know, Brett Kelly's offense as, you know, success in the past. However, I don't like tampering with the rhythm of the quarterback. So if I had to choose a guy for my offense, I'm on desire for the sole fact that he looked comfy running the offense in big games. And I think whenever you can forge an LSU defense, an SEC defense, that shows right there enough people in my book start a young kid that will improve, I think, as time progresses. So I don't think it's a bad decision to hand it down to a young kid who can evolve into a really good quarterback once he's up the class.
Yeah, you had a really interesting piece on Today's You this week, getting a lot of fan perspective on that quarterback battle. I thought it was interesting. A lot of times it seems like there's a fan favorite and then another guy that maybe the coach likes or the team likes, but it really was split down the middle with the fans. So it should come down to the wire. I'm sure it'll go into fall camp, summer practices, that is. We also have Stephen Sheehan on the line now. He's our NFL draft expert. We'll talk about the NFL draft in a minute here, but if we're talking about the Notre Dame quarterback battle here, who do you see and has the biggest potential at the next level? Now, Golson is closer to getting there, has more experience at least, but who do you, between that battle, has the most potential, and do you think the one who loses that battle really loses a shot at playing in the NFL?
To me, I think Malik Zaire probably has a little bit more potential. Based on what we've seen from Everett Golson, despite that huge 2012 season and, you know, a good comeback last year, currently he's really rated as a late-round prospect. Some people thought if he had entered the draft, he might have gone undrafted. Both have very similar size, speed ratios, both just about 6 foot, 200 pounds, so they're both a little undersized. But I think ultimately Zaire, who is a very highly rated recruit, when he signed with Notre Dame, one of the top dual-threat quarterbacks in the country, I think he has a little more upside. He has a little more time to, you know, get some seasoning under his belt. Still probably has about, you know, 1 or 2 years of starting at Notre Dame. So I think ultimately in the long term, he's probably a better option. If you're talking about who gives Notre Dame the best chance to win this year, that debate's probably a lot closer between Everett Golson and Malik Zaire. But long-term upside, I'm going with the younger guy, the redshirt sophomore, over, you know, Everett Golson.
Yeah, it seems like some consistency really would have helped Golson, but with sitting out a year and then sort of, you could say losing at least in the bowl his starting job, not really the way that you want to go into the draft. But Notre Dame, is, for the most part, still independent. It is in football, playing those five games against the ACC. But with the NFL draft coming up tomorrow, all eyes are on that. And in the past few years, really the last decade, you could say, the SEC has dominated on draft day, especially that opening round. Steven, do you think that'll be the case again this year, where it's a pretty dominant day one for the SEC, or is there another conference that's going to be right there with both the number of draft picks and the quality of those draft picks?
I agree with you there that the SEC is going to dominate. From my view, they have at least five first-round locks: Dante Fowler, Amari Cooper, Bud Dupree, Lyle Collins, and DJ Humphries, I think, are all locks going the first round. That's not even mentioning guys like Shane Ray, Landon Collins, and Jalen Collins, who I think could also go in the first round. But if there is a conference that I think can rival the SEC on day one in terms of first-round talent, I think it's the Pac-12. You look there at Marcus Mariota, probably the favorite to go number two overall. Leonard Williams, who should go in the top five and is arguably the best overall prospect in the draft. You also have Danny Shelton, the nose tackle from Washington, probably a top 15 pick. Marcus Peters, his teammate, another top 25 type pick, top 15 talent. Eric Armstead, Andres Pete, Jake Fisher, Nelson Aguilar, Jay Strong, and the two defenders from UCLA, Eric Henderson, Owa, I don't even want to try and pronounce the last name, and then another sneaky guy in there, Eric Rowe. So I think Pac-12 is going to rival the SEC for first-round talent. Also, don't sleep on the Big Ten with Brandon Sheriff, Brandon Gregory, Melvin Gordon. Those guys are all pretty solid, and a couple of big-time running backs on day two, and Tevin Coleman, Amir Abdullah. I think those are the three conferences that I'm looking at to be most productive on draft day.
Yeah, it's interesting that we have to say don't sleep on the Big Ten, especially with the success they've had this past year and really with recruiting as well the last few years. But it does seem like the amount of talent and the level of talent going to the NFL still kind of lags behind. Alex, you're in Big Ten land, follow those teams pretty closely. Do you think it's just a matter of time before the Big Ten is competing in terms of NFL talent with the other conferences, where they're catching up on recruiting, catching up clearly on the field? Is it a matter of time, or is it something else where the Big Ten may have a lot of success at the collegiate level but may not churn out consistently the top pros?
Well, I think, Colin, it's kind of hard to say right now. I think you look at the Big Ten and, you know, how they've regressed in the past years. It's pretty much, you know, SEC-heavy type football in the modern day. But, you know, you're going to have your, you know, your Wisconsin linemen. You're going to have your, you know, Michigan State quarterback. You're going to have, you know, some guys on the outside that go. So, you know, I don't know if this is a matter of, you know, not having maybe, you know, catching up this at some of these schools down in the Big 12 and Pac-12 and SEC, or if it's just, you know, a matter of, you know, not being able to recruit right now. So I think only time will tell here, but, you know, it is a hard question, and it hits home for me because being a Midwest guy and seeing Big Ten football kind of be overshadowed, I'll definitely be rooting for, you know, guys like Melvin Gordon, and, you know, in this draft and for them to succeed. So, you know, kind of give me some credit here. I've been trying to hold back some frustration from seeing the Big Ten collapse so much. So, and Steven made a great point with the Big Ten not to sleep on you know, a lot of the guys in day one and two. But I think they could surprise some people this year, and I'm hoping that they can get on track as soon as they can with you know, some of these teams like Michigan, and, you know, who knows what the past for Maryland and Rutgers, and, you know, hopefully Penn State can regain whatever they had, you know, in the circa 2000. So it'll be fun to see, and it'll be, you know, kind of anxious to see how fast this this program or the programs in this conference kind of, you know, gets back up to speed.
Yeah, we've talked about here on the podcast before about how vindicating it must be for Big Ten fans to get that national championship after kind of being the little guys of the Power Five conferences, and the other conference that sort of gets that reputation is the ACC, and they're the ones, Florida State Seminoles, that won it the year before. So it is kind of an interesting time in terms of conference perception, especially as it relates to turning out NFL talent. So I'm sure James Winston will go along a long way in that regard. to flip it to the other side and back to the field in college football, we've had, again, the spring practices for the most part wrapped up. Alex, if you had one biggest takeaway from spring practice, and clearly there's so many position battles, there's new coaches, we had an attendance mark record set. What to you is the biggest takeaway from the spring season, the past month and a half or so?
Sure. Well, watching the Texas spring game, my eyes, along with many others, were completely fixated on Tyrone Smoot, their quarterback, and looking at a guy coming off the air where he struggled to make, you know, throws down the field, looked extremely uncomfortable, and for a prestigious program like this, they're so long overdue for a big year, and that's talking about, you know, just the recent handful of years that they've kind of, you know, taken a step down and regressed, but Smoot ended up with, you know, 17 completions, 31 pass attempts, 159 yards. So you have to think that the Horns' offensive game plan for next year will be to, you know, establish a run game, make real quick passes out of, you know, 3 and 5 step drops for Smoot. So usually it's a case of the jitters for a guy getting his feet wet, you know, playing quarterback at a school like Texas. But you have to account for the pressure that he's under for Texas fans as a quarterback playing in that program. So I think that that's a program and that's an individual that actually has a lot to make up for next year. So I'm curious to see what style that's going to go and if he's going to progress or if he's going to, you know, pretty much cement himself as a jittery and underachieving quarterback.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some under-the-radar play, as you mentioned, and programs this spring. You look at the game this weekend coming up with Oregon playing their spring game, and it almost seems like with Marcus Mariota going to the NFL draft that they're going unnoticed. So, Steven, I'll turn this one to you. Do you think that even with Oregon coming off making it to the college football playoff, do you think that they're sort of under the radar this spring without Marcus Mariota now that he's going to the NFL draft? Or is this just they have a new quarterback, people aren't that high on them, USC might be back, they're, you know, just going with the sexier pick, I guess. Is Oregon an under-the-radar team this coming year to you?
Yeah, I think both points hit home. I think the fact that Mariota, a guy who's been extremely successful, you know, going to be a top-5 pick. You know, without him at the helm, there's obviously some concern that Oregon's going to slip back. But if you go by, you know, conventional wisdom that it's all about the system there at Oregon, you have to think that they're not going to fall too far. But I tend to agree more with USC. I think that people are kind of getting on the bandwagon that they're going to turn things around and get back now that they're even farther removed from, you know, all the suspensions and loss of scholarships and all the stuff they have to deal with. And, you know, you have to figure that some of those other big teams are going to be fighting back. Guys like Alabama, you know, they're obviously motivated. FSU motivated again the system and the way their season's ended. So I think it's a combination of both factors. But it is very interesting to see whether it's the system at Oregon or whether Marcus Mariota really was that special of a player to be able to carry this team that far over the past couple of seasons. So it'll be interesting to tune in and watch the Ducks this year and see if they, you know, fall off the court, if they're able to keep rolling even without, you know, a guy that some consider to be one of the best quarterback prospects to come out in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, as a USC Trojan, I've been victim to high expectations for about the last 5 years at USC. So I'm trying to keep the expectations low, and if they do great, then all the better. Steven, a quick take to close us out with here. What's your takeaway from Jim McElwain's first spring at Florida? Good job, bad job, biggest takeaway from the first spring season for McElwain?
Biggest takeaway is that Will Muschamp did not leave a lot behind. Jim McElwain really hasn't worked out for him. The offense is even what I think some of us thought. You know, they already had some quarterback issues there with whether they're going to have to go with Tran, Eric, or both guys during their second season. The other guy really stood out either way. They've kind of been average. The wide receiver group is obviously a little disappointing outside of DeMarcus Robinson. He even more concerning is the fact that they can't build an offensive line. One of their few experienced players, Roger Johnson, announced that he's hanging him up after some injuries that he's had. It's going to be a real tough year in Gainesville. I'm going to be graduating. I won't have to watch in person next year, but I'm not too excited to be honest about the team's prospects. I think the only thing they can hang their hat on is that they're going to defense yet again, but the offense is going to take a lot of magic from Jim McElwain to be confident, and I don't even think that is going to be the case next season. It's going to take a couple years to rebuild what Middle Muschamp left behind, which is absolutely nothing on the offense side at all.
So it sounds like high hopes for the future, but don't want to put any of them too high for the first year there with the cupboard being pretty empty. Well, thank you guys for hopping on the podcast today for the latest on the NFL draft and spring practice. You can read Steven and Alex multiple times a week on Today's You and find them on Twitter. Steven is at Steven P. Sheehan, and Alex is at AlexK_47. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks a lot, Colin.
Thanks, Colin.
All right, we'll get moving to the basketball side of things. A lot of interesting things going on in the way of recruiting. We also have some impact transfers coming in, guys who are going to be eligible immediately. Let's get Andrew Beverly and Dan Stack on the line. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Doing well. How are y'all?
Doing pretty well. We'll kick things off by talking about, Dan, you've been doing some recaps and outlooks for the Big East going into 2015, really trying to project where the programs are and how they're going to fare going into next season. Who do you, Dan, are the biggest impact transfers that could really get a team to the top two or three in the conference who this year might have been somewhere in the middle of the pack? Because there's a good number of transfers to choose from, especially in the Big East.
Well, I don't know if I see that many transfers in the Big East. I see one that I did. I did a story on today. I see Tyler Lewis fitting in like a glove with Butler. He's essentially going to be replacing Alex Barlow at point guard for the Bulldogs. He could direct traffic. He's a perfect fit in Butler's system. And I see this as a four-team race, pretty much, with Providence losing firepower and Lodante Henton and Carson DeRozers and Tyler Harris. Even though Chris Dunn's come back, I see them slipping back to the pack. But I see this as a wide-open race between Georgetown, Villanova, Xavier, and Butler. Those are the four teams that I have to watch out for.
Yeah, it seems like it will be a little different going into next season where there's a lot of depth this year. The Big East might be a little bit more top-heavy in 2015, 2016, that season. Bev, do you agree with Dan that it's pretty much a four-team race in the Big East, or are there other teams that you think could contend for that Big East title as well?
You know, I think I don't know as much about the Big East as Dan does, but I definitely think I definitely think Villanova is the favorite. You know, this new guy coming in, Jalen Brunson, he's a point guard, McDonald's All-American. I mean, he is just phenomenal. I mean, he could very well be the best player on their team next year as a freshman. And they return a bunch of people. And I do think Butler's going to be good because Butler is always good. You know, they're going to have a good, like, experienced team. And they're going to overachieve as always. And I think Georgetown could be good, actually. Even though, I mean, they're losing a bunch of guys, but they're also bringing some guys in.
Yeah, it seems like Butler has that formula that doesn't necessarily look great at every point in the season, but it gels at one point, and they really are playing strong basketball at the right time. It's been an interesting week, Bev, I know, for you covering it all in recruiting. You have Jaylen Brown basically eliminating one team at a time every few hours, it seems like, as he tries to count down, really, to his commitment. You also have Brandon Ingram, and this is before the Jaylen Brown countdown, we'll say, kind of throwing UNC under the bus before committing to Duke. So do you think that recruits are sort of using the media now, or is there any sort of manipulation trying to increase their own recruitment, or is this just high schoolers being high schoolers?
I mean, you know, I think it's a combination of both. The Brandon Ingram thing is so weird to me because, like, I don't think threw UNC under the bus. He did, but it wasn't intentional. Like, I don't think he ever had any intention of hurting the program. I mean, they've been recruiting him hard for years. And that whole ESPNU interview, and he said, yeah, you know, they received notice of their allegations on April 17th, and then UNC came out and was like, no, like, that never happened. I don't know why this guy is saying that happened because it never did. I mean, like, in a way, I mean, Ingram clearly heard something from somebody about that, whether it be from somebody from Carolina or, you know, an opposing coach. Brandon Ingram is the kind of guy that, you know, opposing coaches would throw some stuff that may not be completely true at because it's just that good. And they'd pretty much do anything in their power to get him. I know that sounds messed up, but, I mean, come on. It's college athletics. That's what happens. And, you know, and Brandon Ingram, I don't think, was exploiting the media. I don't think that was ever his intention. He's also, like, a real, like, soft-spoken, reserved guy. I mean, he's not really this eccentric personality. Jaylen Brown, on the other hand, just seems to be, like, trolling the world right now. Or at least, like, people who follow recruiting, like me. Like, eliminating UCLA and being like, oh, wow, like, my college choices are down to 7. I'm like, yeah, we already knew you weren't going to go to UCLA. Like, and he's like, oh, like, Georgia and Georgia Tech are gone now a couple hours later, and I'm surprised he didn't just cut it down to, like, his final 2 and then make us wait another 3 weeks before telling us where he's going. But, I mean, I think Jaylen Brown has a personality in which, like, you know, he kind of – he likes the media. He likes the attention. Like, he does, you know, like, Bleacher Report exclusive videos to announce his top 8, you know, to get on video, even though he basically announced his top 8 like a month and a half ago. I think it's funny. I'd love to talk to him, and I support what he's doing because it's entertaining. I don't know if that answered any question you posed, but
no, it makes it come across as, and I think it is the way it should come across as entertainment, and you don't want to resent the guy for taking some time on making a really big decision and
of course,
trying to eliminate one at a time. So that decision will come, like you said, probably in the next few weeks or so. Everybody will be on pins and needles trying to figure that one out.
Hopefully we'll go to Cal. I'm going to throw it out there. I hope he goes to Cal.
All right.
If you hear this, Jaylen Brown, please go to Cal. It would be really, really cool if you went there. I'm not even a Cal fan, but it would be cool. Sorry.
All right, we'll make sure you hear. So Duke, of course, does land Brandon Ingram. And they, once again, the Blue Devils, have what is probably considered the number one recruiting class in the nation. Dan, to you, is Duke, because of that, because they won the national title, they have the number one recruiting class, is Duke the preseason number one for you, or is there somebody else that, even with Duke winning the title and getting what we'll call the number one recruiting class, and you can dispute that if you want, but are they the number one preseason for you?
I don't think it's a unanimous decision. No, I think they're going to this class is very good. It's, without a doubt, I think the best class coming in this year. But I don't think it's as special as last year's class. I think you had once-in-a-generation kind of point guard in Tyus Jones, and the maybe the number one or number two pick in Jahlil Okafor, and another lottery pick in Justice Winslow. And I think that was a special class. I just don't think this class is going to be as good. They're certainly going to be great under Coach K. He's going to make them better. This is going to be a team that's going to be poised for a deep run in March, but I don't think they'll be the favorites to cut. I like North Carolina. I like Kansas and Iowa State and even Maryland as teams I like better than Duke right now.
Yeah, Maryland should be right up there, probably in the top five to start the season. We also clearly have to wait on guys like Jaylen Brown, like Thon Maker, assuming he's going to switch to 2015. So a lot of pieces could fall. If Thon Maker goes to Indiana, all of a sudden Indiana's looking really good. Maybe not preseason number one, but they immediately become a contender with Yogi Ferrell coming back as well. Bev, to you, what is a team that could jump into that top five, let's say, if they do land a couple of big names down the stretch here in recruiting?
I definitely think Indiana. That's the first to come to mind because I think Thon Maker ends up going to Indiana. They're a big Adidas school. He's been, with the Adidas AAU team. And I actually do think, it makes a difference because, that leads to more money when he gets into the league. But, the interesting thing about Indiana is that they may actually get this is kind of unrelated, but if Thon Maker does elect to college, I don't know if y'all have read this, like his guardian, Ed Smith is his name, said that he likely wouldn't enroll until December. So we would get, 2 years of Thon Maker, and he would come in pretty much as conference play started. I stay Indiana because of Thon Maker, but at the same time, I don't know if Maker is going to be quite as phenomenal as people think he is. I don't think he's built up his body enough. I think he needs to get bigger. He can get bullied down low. And I don't really think Tom Crean is going to use him as like a four. But he's a great player. I think Thomas Bryant is maybe, now that Brandon Ingram has really shot up recruiting boards into the top four, I think Thomas Bryant is probably the most underrated player in the class now. He's amazing. If you watch any of the Dick's national championships, he was just phenomenal. I think, depending on where LSU is ranked, I think LSU has the potential to be really good because their class is so good. I mean, they got Blakeney. They got Ben Simmons, who can play any position on the floor. They got Blakeney. They got Brandon Sampson, who's a great player that not a lot of people know about. And that's just based off of recruiting. And Michigan State. I think Michigan State is going to be great.
Interesting.
Because they have a good – because Valentine's coming back. They got what's his name? Caleb Swanigan coming in. Their front court's going to be fantastic. Tom Izzo is Tom Izzo, so they're going to be good anyway because they're always going to be good.
And Eron Harris transferring is huge for them too.
Oh.
Also,
sorry.
I
apologize.
I'm surprised nobody threw in, or Bev, you didn't throw in Cal, and I know Cal – might not be a top five team, so that might have been why. But if they do land a guy like Jaylen Brown, they have landed a couple other recruits as well. Quenzo Martin really doing some great things there. So you never know. Cal could become one of these contenders along with Arizona and Utah in the Pac-12. So definitely be interesting
I agree. I definitely agree. I mean, especially if they can bring in Jaylen Brown. I mean, Jaylen Brown, for as entertaining as his recruiting process has been and the whole thing off the court that people blew up about him getting arrested running stop sign. For all that talk about him, I think what's been lost in the mix is that he's just phenomenally good at basketball. Like, he's amazing.
Right.
Like, he's like a program changing dude. And I think if he went to Cal, they could very well be a top 10 team. I mean, easily.
Wow. That would be interesting to see sort of the two-headed monster in the Pac-12 become a three-headed monster. And they still have a long way to go before that is a deep conference, but you can see it moving in that direction. So thanks, guys, for updating us on the latest in recruiting and college basketball. You can read Dan and Bev multiple times a week on todaysyou.com and on Twitter. Dan is at StackDemon, and Bev is at Andrew_Bev. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep. Have a good night. Pleasure being here.
Thank you. See y'all.
All right, well, keep an eye out on Today's U this week for coverage on those last spring games, Oregon and Hawaii. We'll start doing previews of the summer practice leading into the season. And as well on the college basketball side, we'll keep you up to date on all the recruits committing and try to start figuring things out in the way of this top 5, top 25 heading into next year.